Well, good day to you. It's Joel with The King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
Friends, welcome back to the Love and Relationships Podcast. I'm your host, Deborah Falada, and I'm so glad you're tuning into these candid conversations about love, sex, dating, singleness, and marriage. For those of you who don't know me or are tuning in for the first time, I'm a licensed professional counselor and author specializing in relationship issues. I also run the relationship advice blog, truelovedates.com, reaching millions of people with the message that healthy people make healthy relationships. If you've tuned into the podcast before, you know it's a hotline style show, meaning people call in or write in with their relationship questions, and I answer them on this show in short, practical, bite-sized answers. If you have a question that you want me to answer on the show, send it via email or voice memo to Deborah@truelovedates.com or check out my podcast page, truelovedates.com/love and relationships, and I'll do my best to get it answered on one of the episodes. So let's get started. Today's question comes from Sue from Delaware.
Hi, Deborah. My name is Sue from Delaware. My husband and I are feeling off. Sometimes I feel like I don't even know him anymore. What can we do to get back on track?
I'm really excited to have a special guest helping me answer this question on the show today. So let me introduce you to Dr. Kim Kimberling. Dr. Kim has been a professional counselor for over 30 years. He has a PhD and a Doctor of Ministry in Christian Counseling. Dr. Kim is president and co-founder of a ministry called Awesome Marriage. Awesome Marriage reaches thousands of people each month with God's plan for marriage and relationships. Him and his wife, Nancy, have been married over 40 years, and together they have two adult married children and five awesome grandchildren. Dr. Kim's inspiration and passion for marriage began at a young age as he watched his parents live out the true meaning of having an awesome marriage centered around God's incredible plan. He's open and honest about the struggles he's experienced in marriage. And that's one of the things I love about him, because he uses these personal examples to help so many people. His newest book, 14 Keys to Lasting Love, is filled with practical advice and down-to-earth perspectives about taking your marriage to the next level. And I just love his ministry and his resources so much. And I'm so excited to have him on the show today. Dr. Kimberling, it's so good to have you today on the Love and Relationships podcast.
Deborah, it's so good to be here. It's so good to have you as a friend and have connected so many times in the past with our podcast and other things. And just love your ministry, love everything that you
yes,
do.
Yes, thank you so much. And we love what you're doing at Awesome Marriage and just the fantastic content that you are putting out there. And I want to talk a little bit about that today. You heard this sure. question, you know, and this couple that is just feeling a little bit off. And we know, you know, as marriage counselors, that tends to happen in relationships where a couple just feels like they're drifting, they're not on the mm-hmm. same page. And you talk a lot about that. In fact, in your new book, 14 Keys to Lasting Love, you have an entire chapter on staying on track and things that couples have in common. So in your opinion, how do couples end up at that point where they feel like they're off track?
Yeah, and I think that's really a common thing. I see so many people in the counseling room that that's just kind of what happened. And I think probably a number of ways, and it can be a little unique to each couple, but certainly I think life gets in the way a lot. You get married, and you know, I do premarital counseling with couples. I always hear the term, we're so much alike. And yeah. then when I see couples in counseling a few A few years later, I say, so what do y'all like to do together? What connects you? And they just kind of stare blankly at me sometimes. And so it's not like they don't know how to do it. I think life gets in the way. I think you get married and then you start, maybe both working. Certainly when kids come in, kids are such a blessing, but they are a distraction for marriage if you're not really intentional about it.
Yes.
And so I think just all these things happen in our lives. And I don't use, I think if it happened in one big jump, that we would get kind of shake our head and go, oh yeah, we got to do something about this. But I think it happens gradually and over a period of time, and you realize, you wake up one day and you think, yeah, we're not near as connected as we were. We're not as close as we used to be. And I don't like that. Couples don't like that. You didn't get married to live separate lives under the same house. You got married to connect and to live life together and to know that your life and is more valuable because you've got this person walking through life with you.
Right.
And that's what we all want. We just sometimes, and I think especially in the culture we live in, we have to be so intentional about that on a consistent basis. Or it doesn't happen.
Yeah,
it doesn't happen.
Absolutely. It's so true. And in my marriage, in the marriages I see and couples I work with, in choosing marriage, I use this analogy where this recently when my husband and I take the kids to the beach, have you ever been in the ocean and you're hanging out, you're swimming, you're jumping waves, and all of a sudden you turn around and you're 20, 30 feet away from where you used to be because the waves are just slowly taking you, this slow drift that you don't even realize is happening. And I feel like the same thing goes of marriage. It's this slow drift that if you're not constantly working towards fighting against that drift, it's going to eventually happen. And like you said, it's not just overnight where couples wake up and they think, what happened yesterday, we were so close. It's the slow and steady drift. And you talk about the importance of, part of moving against that wave is having daily check-ins. And I love that. I'm all about that. And I'd love to hear your take on these check-ins and what they've looked like for you personally over the years.
Yes, because I do think they're so important. One of the things I try to help people get a picture of, if you really want an awesome marriage and that is your goal and you keep looking, if you look at a highway and that's down there, that's that goal, then everything you do every day needs to be toward that goal and you need to be intentional every day. And so I think that's for us, it really was the daily check-ins that were such an important thing. And it varied how we did that over the years, but basically it was we figured out we needed to have some time to connect every single day and how important that was for us. And so before we had kids, it was pretty easy when we both get home from work. We just always made a point of sitting down, and it wasn't always a big in-depth thing. It was just checking up with each other. How you doing? What was your day like? What was funny? Something funny that happened? Just interacting that way. Did you see God doing anything today in your life? Just something that just gives you a chance to just connect with communication. And then when the kids came, it was probably a little more of a challenge, especially, I can remember like so many parents do, you come in the door at night and, I've got kids over me, I've got dogs around my feet and I'm thinking, where is my wife? But we always kind of made this pact that we were going to always be intentional about finding each other. And I wanted my kids to see that. I wanted to see my kids that, yes, I want to hug you. I want to give you a kiss and I want to love on you, but I want to love on your mom too. And so I want to find her and we'll see how she's doing. And so we did that. And then that was just kind of a greeting. And then during those years, we would say, after the kids were in bed, then it's when we'd try to have some time, just the two of us to talk together. And I'm not saying that's easy because most couples think by the time you hit that bed, you're exhausted. But I think what we found, staying up an extra 15 or 30 minutes really became worth it.
Yeah.
Because in some ways it would energize me. And so it was just like I had that connection with Nancy. I looked forward to that. And so that was always an important piece. And then after empty nest, we kind of settled back into what we did before we had kids. And that was just when we get home at night that we always are intentional about sitting down and just touching base. And honestly, I wish I could say that I was the one who always initiated that. And that's not true. Nancy initiates it more than me. I'll come in sometime.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Dr. Kimberling, because I think there's a lot of couples out there who are paralyzed because they are living under the belief that if the man doesn't initiate it, it's not going to happen. It shouldn't happen. Like he has to initiate everything. And when it doesn't happen that way, the woman feels like she shouldn't do anything because we've got this presupposition that because the man is supposed to be whatever you want to call it, the leader, the spiritual head, yes, that he has to do the initiating in all these areas. But I believe that we're paralyzing so many relationships because there's women who are waiting for that. And I love that you bring that up because, you know, Nancy is the one that took initiative sometimes, but just as important is the fact that you were willing to engage when she did.
Exactly. And I think that's where, and it was kind of something that we never, I guess, really sat down and said, who's supposed to start this? It was just like, if one of us didn't, the other did, or if one of us got distracted, the other one would. And so it was like, it was something we valued and we know we both wanted to happen every day. And really, Deborah, I think consistently, I could say we probably were consistent with that. Probably 95% of the days we've been married. I mean, that was something that I think we saw how much value it was in those early years of marriage. We knew it kept us connected when we had kids, when we saw other couples drifting apart because they weren't being intentional. And so we knew this is something that we needed to do so we didn't fall in some of those traps. And not that we had a perfect marriage at all, but being connected makes it easier to handle everything else you have to handle in marriage.
Yes, absolutely. And it's true. It sounds so simple, but the practicality of it is really difficult. Dr. Kimberling, you saw the surveys I took of 1,000 married people for publishing Choosing Marriage. I gathered all this data, and the majority of couples reported that they're spending 30 minutes or less a week connecting in quality conversation. And, you know, for those of you who are out there listening who are like, okay, this is crazy, like we're barely talking, forget trying to connect every day. I think it's important to at least start with a weekly check-in, at least, right? Like ease into
Absolutely.
It. Ease into it. And for John and I, it's Sunday nights, Sunday evenings, you know, 9 p.m. Our iPhone timer goes off. It's usually his iPhone timer. And that means no matter what we're doing or where we are, that's our time to connect. And, you know, we try to carve out our schedule for that special time. But, you know, sometimes you're busy. Sometimes we're working on something in the house or whatever, you know, vegging, watching a Netflix show, and then the timer goes off and it's like, you know what, this is a priority. We sit, we talk, we have questions that we ask each other, and it's a part of our schedule. And sometimes you literally need to put it on the schedule in order for it to happen.
Yes, so much. You know, it made me think of a deal. A guy said to me, it's been a long time ago, but he said, you know, my wife is saying to me, something like she was saying to him, like, we don't have enough time together. And he said, yes, we do. Yes, we do. And she said, and this was back when we had, I think, paper calendars. She said, look at your calendar. Where am I on there?
Yeah.
And he goes, oh yeah, you're not, you know? And I think, so we have to be intentional. And I love that John's using a timer on his watch or on his phone, because use technology to remind you of those things.
Know.
And we've got reminders everywhere that we didn't used to have. And they're right there with us all
the
time.
That's so true. Absolutely. And one thing I loved about your book that I don't see people talk about often is the distraction of children. You know, we've got three small children at this point, and you know what it's like. You've been there, done that. And I just think that we've got to be so careful because we live in such a child-centric culture, and children are kind of like the most important thing, especially millennials. I feel like we've got kind of a child-focused home, which is great because years ago, children were kind of on the back burner. So I feel like it's a step in the right direction, but at the same time, it's taking away from our marriages in some cases because we pour so much into our children and so little into our marriages. And I remember in your book, you kind of talked about this, and, you know, I would just love to get one practical suggestion that you could think of how a couple could really not fall into that trap of having a child-centric home, especially those of us with young kids, and we're kind of in the thick of it right now.
Yeah, and I think it really, a lot of it is about balance. You know, did Nancy and I have as much time for each other as we did before or after kids? Probably, no, we didn't. But if, by being intentional about it and balancing and saying this is a priority for us to have time together, and I think doing the things like you and John are doing, setting a time so that is intentional, it helps us not to do that, because I think you're right. And I think I do see this probably more with millennials than I have probably with any other generation since I've been counseling, and that is the fact that they're peers, their culture is driving them to be more child-centered.
Right.
And I think what happens if you're 100% child-centered, your marriage is going to suffer. And if your marriage suffers, eventually your kids are going to suffer.
Absolutely.
And you're also setting an example for them. I wanted my kids growing up to know that their wife and their husband were very, very important, and that it was important for them to spend time together and to work on their marriage. And so if we didn't model that, they wouldn't have learned that.
Right. Yeah. People don't see it that way. And it's true. If your marriage isn't your top priority, everything from that point on will suffer, and especially your children, because if there's tension in the home, if they're seeing, you know, like the cold shoulder on a regular basis or arguing or conflict, like that stuff begins to seep into the way they do relationships and the way they see themselves and just so many different things. So there's so many layers to this and why it's so important to kind of keep each other first. You talk about 4 steps to regain connection that couples can take, practical things. Let's talk through those.
Well, I think one of the things, if couples that are listening to this and they're thinking, man, we're just not doing this, I think the first step really is to set aside some time where you guys just talk about that. Maybe you set aside an hour, no interruptions, and this isn't really a date night time. It's a work time. It is a time that will lead to date nights, but it's a time where you can begin to talk about, just assess where you are and what you guys want that connection time to look like. Do we want to bring something back we used to do? We want to do something new? How do we want to handle that? And so I think that's the first thing, is just to be intentional about setting that time to do that.
Yes.
And then I think committing to a daily time together. And you know what? If it's 5 minutes, that's fine. That's probably more than you're doing now. Even like you said, you know, in your survey of 30 minutes. But if you're intentional with that 5 minutes, if you're really focusing on each other, if you're really listening to each other, that 5 minutes can be valuable and help your marriage. And then I think what happens with couples I suggest that to, all of a sudden they're doing 15 minutes or trying to find out how do we find a little bit more time, because this is really helping our marriage. So I think starting there, the big thing is commitment to do that. And then I think also just kind of brainstorm ideas. What did you do when you were dating that you enjoyed? What did you do when you engaged? What did you do before you had kids? What were things that connected you at one time in your marriage that maybe you quit doing, you know? And so then you say, can we do some of those now? And you don't want to put in something like for our future date night, you know, how do we put some of those things in that we know will be good for us? And I think, you know, one of the things I think is important too, to really talk about your physical touch. And there is something about coming home and hugging Nancy, it always has been, that energizes us. And I think physiology tells us that there's these little touch receptors in our bodies, and that energizes us. And so physical touch, both sexual and non-sexual, are so important for a couple. And I think sometimes, you know, I couldn't wait to go on a date with her and hold her hand or put my arm around her when we were dating. And I think sometimes we forget doing those things that kind of connected and bond us early on, and don't do those as consistent in marriage, or it just gets to where it's just sexual and we don't do the other non-sexual things that really can connect us in so many ways. So I think that needs to be a part of it.
And you don't realize how little of that touch you get when, especially in the stage of young children, because, you know, usually one person's wrangling one child, one's holding the other, one's changing a diaper. It's like, you know, you don't even realize that the day can go by and you're not engaging in those moments of deliberate physical, non-sexual touch. Like, you've really got to think through how that looks in your marriage relationship. I love that you bring that point up.
I think it is so important. And I think you're so right. When there's kids around, you're getting a lot of physical touch, one way or the other, from them.
Right.
But it's not the same as if you get it from your spouse. And so I think really building that back in, you know, just look for those opportunities where you can just have the hug, you know, holding hands, putting your arm around each other, something that just lets you touch each other. And then I think the last thing is, once you get those things down, don't let anything get in the way of following through. Make them marriage-long habits. Start and be intentional, and then reap the benefits, but don't go back to where you were. Just keep moving forward with it.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing that you mentioned that I want to go back to is you talked just recently, a few seconds ago, about the difference between work time and date time. And I think that is a key distinction because, you know, some couples that I talk to in counseling, they may have date nights, but they don't have work nights. They don't differentiate the difference between enjoying each other and actually working on the marriage. And I'm not saying that those two can never overlap, because of course, sometimes John and I use our date nights as work nights where we're talking about things. But can you help us differentiate between the difference of work time and date time? And, you know, how much of each should we have? And what does that look like practically?
Well, I think one thing that I guess where I kind of started thinking that through, I think date nights should really just be for fun.
Yeah.
So I think that's a time you want to enjoy each other. You want to do something that you enjoy or try some new things. You're trying to figure out, do we enjoy this or whatever? And not let maybe some of the burdens of life get into that. Just that time where you go and you just enjoy each other. And then I think there's times to be intentional where you talk about, you know, what do we want in our marriage? How we're not connecting well. How do we connect more? We used to do kind of a checkup, and we would do that on Sundays, and we really did it more. We don't do that much now. We did it a lot when the kids were young because I think it was so easy for us to get off track at that time. And so it was kind of a way to recenter and to reprioritize and make sure that we, if we were drifting, that we caught it before we drifted too far. And so I think maybe you build that in, whatever seems to work for you guys for a couple. But I would say definitely once a month to sit down and just kind of evaluate where you are and kind of make some plans for the future would be really healthy. If you wanted it more than that, that would be great. One of the things that Nancy and I do every year, and that's at about this time of year, we look forward to the next year. We kind of talk about what our marriage was like for the past year, what was good, and then find some areas. What did we not do like we wanted to? What is something we can work on for the next year? So we'll pick something for 2019. Okay. Maybe it's communication. Maybe it's, maybe we're just not doing our conflict as well as we used to. You know, we're getting frustrated with each other. So we'll pick something that we'll really be intentional about working on for that next year. And that's been something really helpful too, because it, I think, improves our marriage. And two, as we do that, it gives us something to celebrate throughout the year as we make some steps forward.
Yeah. And people might think it sounds silly, but you've got to kind of view your marriage as a business that you're trying to grow or a company that you're trying to lead, because truly we put goals and visions and dreams and all these other areas of our life, but marriage, we kind of just assume that it's going to get better or just because we're Christian, it's going to be good. But that's not how any other part of our life works. You know, in any other part of our life, we are doing preventative work. We're doing goal setting. We're moving forward. I always say you don't take your car in for an oil change after it breaks down. You take it in before it breaks down. It's preventative. And maybe that even means counseling for some couples. You know, maybe that work time means inviting a counselor like yourself or myself into their relationship to kind of help them set goals, help them see what needs to be worked on, give them some launching points for their marriage. And I just want to encourage anyone listening, like, counseling isn't just for when your relationship is completely destroyed. Counseling is preventative. Counseling can help you get ahead and move towards healthy relationships before major issues arise.
That's so good. And I love it when I've got some couples that do that. They'll come in once or twice a year, and that's really what we do. We kind of see where they are. And it is amazing how something always comes out of those sessions, I think, that's helpful for them. Maybe something they really hadn't identified that they can begin to work on. Sometimes we'll do an assessment and where it kind of evaluates different areas of the marriage, and we'll say, okay, here's something you guys can work on and give them some ideas. So I totally agree. Preventive counseling is huge. And unfortunately, very few people do that.
I know, unfortunately. And I'm hoping that we can kind of spread awareness about this and in marriage and in all other areas of mental health and emotional health, relational health. Another thing that I think is really preventative is you talk about the importance of the first 10 minutes together. The first 10 minutes. Let's talk about that. Give me your thoughts on that.
I wish I could remember who told this to me, and it was a long time ago, but it was and either in a class or something, they said the first 10 minutes of your evening when you're both home together is going to set the tone for the rest of the night.
How true is that?
I can remember so thinking true. Back, and it was so true. It was. If I came in grumpy, it was a grumpy night. You know, if it was, you know, all this kind of stuff. So I started saying, what are some things that we can do to make that better? One of the things that I started doing that God really showed me, I think, was on my way home from work that I would pray and I would leave all the day with God, the people I saw, the people that I had concerns about that I worked with in counseling. And then I would begin to think, okay, what's going to happen when I walk through the door? What are Nancy and the kids going to be doing? And how can I walk into that? And always, how can I find her first and let her know that that I care, to touch base with her, to say, is there anything I can do to help, you know, or something like that? That made such a difference. And I think we both really saw the value of it. You know, I have couples that say, I had a couple not too long ago, and the lady said, my husband gets home first, when I get home, he's watching TV or playing a video game. It's like I never walked in the room. Right. Well, how does that make her feel? And what does that do for the rest of the evening? And so then at 10:30, he wants to have sex with her. Is she going to be really excited about that? Probably not, because you ignored the last 3 hours that I was home. And so I think it's so important. Plus, it's fun. It's fun to just look in her eyes and just say, how was your day? And is there anything I can do to help you? And what's going on here? And, you know, I don't want to ever put up like we're perfect. A lot of things we do now is because we screwed up a lot in the past, you know, and we've learned a lot of things the hard way. And so hopefully some of this will help other people not have to go through some of those hard things that we did. But I just think that's such a valuable thing. And I think if both of you are intentional about it, it's amazing how that can set the tone. You're going to have a lot better evenings than you've been having.
Absolutely. And for those of you with young children, I know when John comes home from work, oftentimes it's like a zoo at our house. You know, there's kids everywhere and stuff's going on, and we homeschool and dinner. You know, it really can be insane. And I just want to encourage you, because this is something I'm working on too. Those first 10 minutes for me, you know, after a long day with the kids or whatever you're doing, it's like you can feel so drained at a certain time of day. But I do want to encourage those of you in our stage with young kids, get creative, you know, like sometimes I send the kids in another room with a big box of books or some Play-Doh, or turn on a little bit of a TV show for them to watch, so that John and I have 10 minutes to just talk, to just interact without any distractions. And, you know, the kids, of course, always tackle him when he comes home, and they have a couple seconds of that fun ritual. But then it's like, okay, now let's find something to do so that mommy and daddy can talk for a few minutes, and then we'll have dinner and kind of get the evening going. But it's important to set boundaries like that with kids, because they're not going to set them. They're not going to be like, oh, you know, mother and father, we're going to just go play by ourselves for a few minutes so you guys can talk. Like, it's not going to ever happen.
So we have to think that their kids do that.
Exactly.
Let us know how you got that.
Please
across,
let us know. So we have to be deliberate to set boundaries with our kids so that we can make that time a priority, and value that time. And I really do believe it sets the stage, like you said, and I see that at play in my marriage. When I'm not feeling good or I've had a rough day, like that 10 minutes, if I'm putting that on John, it really sets the stage in a negative way for the rest of our evening. So working on that 10 minutes is so, so key. And I love that you brought that up. Before we close today, do you have any advice for couples who might be listening to this and they're like, oh my goodness, like, we are so far from this. We have absolutely nothing in common. I don't even know where to begin. How can a couple start developing common interests, finding common ground? What suggestions do you have?
Sure, because I think there's probably couples listening that are going to feel exactly the same way, and hopefully feel the nudge to, we need to do something about that. And so I think one is, I think the first thing is sitting down with your spouse. Maybe you just talk about this podcast, or maybe you say, will you listen to this with me again and see if we can get something out of that we might move forward with. And then you want to say, can we commit to begin to do some things that will connect us? And then you're going to sit there and go, okay, what do we do? Well, one of the things that I've suggested to couples in the past is just have each one of them take 5 pieces of paper and write down something they would like to do with their spouse. And you put those in a jar each one a separate jar, and then each week you draw one of those out of one of the jars, and you have to do what your spouse wrote down. And so whatever that is, you guys go and try and see if you can do it. If it's something you guys enjoy together that connects you, great. If it didn't, you put that aside, and next week you're going to draw something else out. But I think it gives you a chance to try some new things, maybe bring back some things you did in the past. Plus, you're being intentional about your marriage. Just the fact of doing that and taking the time to do that is going to be a big step forward. And it may be awkward at first, all those kind of things, but you had to connect before you got married or you would have never got to the altar. So you lost it somewhere. And so let's regain that, because most of us have a lot of life and a lot of marriage in front of us, and we want to enjoy that to the fullest. And God's gift of marriage is such an incredible gift to us, and we don't want to miss out on anything that He has for us in that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is where singles kind of get a little confused when they're looking at marriage from the outside looking in, because in my surveys of 1,000 singles, most of them assumed that couples spend a majority of their hobbies and interests in shared things. But again, as you and I know, in the surveys of married people, most of them actually reported that they have separate hobbies and interests. They kind of just veg by themselves. Their free time is by themselves. Their downtime is by themselves. Maybe he'll go golfing or she'll go out with friends. And I'm not saying that stuff is wrong or bad, but commonality and common interests are so key. And sometimes it takes work to develop those common interests, to find things that both of you love, or get involved in something that only one of you loves and see if you can start developing a passion for that thing, whether it be art, whether it be golf, whether it be sports, whether it be cooking. And find things that you can do together, try new things, and really fight that drift of marriage by going the opposite direction and moving toward one another. Thank you so much, Dr. Kimberling. What a great conversation. And I really believe that your book and your resources are just going to bless so many couples out there in really practical ways. Thank you so much for joining us today on the podcast.
Thanks, Deborah. It's been a joy to be with you.
Thanks so much for tuning into the podcast today. I hope this episode encouraged you and gave you some practical steps to take in your love life. Be sure to connect with Dr. Kim by going to awesomemarriage.com and checking out his many resources, including books, podcasts, and marriage-enriching emails. I'll link to all his details in today's show notes. And friends, please keep sending me all your relationship questions. I want to hear what you've got going on. Go to truelovedates.com/love-and-relationships or send your questions in voice memo form to Deborah@truelovedates.com. If you're loving what you're hearing on this show, I invite you to check out my blog, truelovedates.com, or either of my books, True Love Dates or Choosing Marriage, and get serious about getting information that's going to help you get healthy and move you in the direction of healthy relationships. Help us get the word out about this podcast by leaving your 5-star review on iTunes, and then connect with me on Facebook or Instagram at True Love Dates and give me a shout out, because I love hearing from you and connecting with you. I'm Deborah Falada, and it was so good to be together again today. And I can't wait to chat with you again next week. Take care.